School we love, Elmhurst, live for aye. God shed his grace on thee. Loyal be thy sons and daughters to thy memory.
Hello, and welcome to the Calling All Voices podcast. I'm Dr. Erica McCombs.
And I'm Dr. Janice Tuck-Lively.
We have another exciting episode for you today. We were able to bring in Bruce King, our inaugural Vice President of Equity and Inclusion.
Our conversation with Bruce was very informative and, as you say, exciting, because Bruce was able to share with us his definition of equity and inclusion and also his vision for what it will look like at Elmhurst University. So why don't we begin today's conversation? Welcome, Bruce. We're so glad that you made time in your busy schedule, because we know at the end of the year that things are really exciting and busy here at Elmhurst, to come and sit down and talk to us. Welcome to Calling All Voices. I guess we'd like to begin asking you a couple of things. First, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. That's one of the things we hadn't really gotten into, what your background has been prior to coming to Elmhurst.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Thanks to both of you, Erica and Janice. I am really pleased to be here. I came here directly from a time at City Colleges of Chicago, but really a lot of my career has been spent in Minnesota. I was at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota for about 13 years, where I was first the director of institutional, I was in charge of institutional diversity and assistant to the president, and then became the vice president for equity and inclusion at St. Olaf. But that really is a lot of my career. I started many years ago. This is my third decade in higher education. And very early into my career, kind of fell into, then it was multicultural affairs, that then became diversity, that then became kind of equity and inclusion. And so, but I think the theme that runs through those years is a commitment to access. You know, as a kid who grew up on the south side of Chicago, and really at a time when we were the exception, kids who went to college were the exception, realizing, you know, how I navigated as a then first generation student, though we didn't necessarily use that term as much, what it took to really find my way. Yes. And wasn't intending to be in higher education, but then kind of tripped into that through some work in graduate school that took me into working at small liberal arts colleges. So my first job was at a small college in Western Michigan. And when I arrived there as the director of campus life, so I was in charge of all the fun stuff. And it was early on that I noticed that we, you know, the 11 black students and maybe six Hispanic students, I never saw them at any of the things that we planned. And it got me to thinking about what does it mean to be in these very privileged spaces and live on the periphery. Mm. And so I made a decision way back then that I wanted to somehow be engaged with activities and work that brought people into the center. And those people became people of color, and it has been something that's carried me all the way here to Elmhurst. And over time, it went from worrying about the care and concern of students and their success to really, you can only change students so much, and then you have to change the institution. So I was an early adapter of the whole chief diversity officer movement, that, you know, we needed voices at the senior cabinet level, at the table, to really talk about how we transform institutions and not just adapt to those students who came and made our campuses diverse. So that's a little bit about me.
You touched on something, that chief diversity officer, and you, you mentioned in talking about your background, the trajectory in terms of the name changes, that in terms of the field itself.
Right.
So you made a change to the title that you were going to be bearing here at Elmhurst. And could you tell us a little bit about why you changed that title? And it may seem slight,
Yeah.
But I'm quite sure there's a lot.
There's a lot. To, you know, yes. For me, yeah. There was a lot to it. I know that often when we kind of think about these positions, we want to throw everything into a title. And, you know, that's really important for an institution. But what was important for me was being realistic about what the work that I wanted to do and the work that needs to be done. It's not as much about diversity, because how do you come to a place that's where 40%, 40 plus percent of our students are already racially and culturally diverse,
yes.
And a faculty that represents all kinds of spectrums of diversity, and then come and say, well, I'm here to do diversity, right?
Yes, yes.
You've done diversity. And we can't get hung up on, you know, because often when you put diversity anywhere, it immediately limits our perspective on the kind of work that needs to happen. And so when I think about equity and inclusion, mm-hmm. and I, you know, if we are doing equity and inclusion in the way we should be doing equity and inclusion, diversity is just there, right?
Yes.
If everyone feels like they're being treated equitably, if people feel like they belong and are included, then you're going to create the kind of diversity that you really want. And the other thing about diversity is that nobody wants to be that diversity person,
yes.
Right?
You don't want to be the symbol.
Yeah. You don't want to be Janice, you've been here for quite a while. And if, you know, I said, oh, yeah, Janice is one of our diversity faculty, it immediately negates all of the incredible elements of who you are.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And no one, and especially we find that, you know, nobody wants to be that diversity hire. No one wants to be that product of diversity. But everyone deserves and wants a piece of equity.
Yes.
And inclusion. And so that was important. It was more important for me than, mm-hmm. and I think that I have no reason but to believe that the intentions of the institution when designing the position was looking for someone who's going to help us become more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, is something that we don't need to throw into the pot, right? Because if we're all doing what we are supposed to be doing, creating fair access to both employment and for student admission, if we are creating opportunities for people who are currently underrepresented at the institution, diversity will happen
organically,
right? Yes. And you can't force it.
Yes.
And so I didn't want to become the diversity guy. I've spent a lot of my career as the diversity guy, the diversity police, the PC police, and you know, in this time in my career, I just want to do equity and inclusion.
And mm-hmm. It makes me think about that original point you made when you said you first started out mm-hmm. with student life. And it's this idea of doing what Bell Hooks talked about, mm-hmm. moving those that have been on the margins
exactly.
to be more a part of the center.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it brings a wonderful vision to Elmhurst.
It does.
We're glad
really
that
does.
You're here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You've been here for a bit now.
Oh, 3.5 months. Yeah.
So you're old hat at all of this.
Oh, right. I couldn't even find this building to come and do this. So I'm not that old.
This is one of the hidden gems.
This is one of the hidden gems. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
As you begin your tenure here, mm-hmm. what do you see as needing from the organization to do your work mm-hmm. in the way that you want to efficiently and effectively
yeah.
and,
mm-hmm.
and meet the goals that you have?
Right.
Yes.
The first thing that is always the most important thing is that we want what we're asking for. People talk a lot about, you know, we want equity, we want inclusion, we want everyone to feel like they belong. But often people don't understand the kinds of changes that will
yes.
require.
Yes.
And we're talking about power with a small p.
Mm-hmm.
And I am one who believes that no one wants to give up something. We want to add something, but we don't want to give it up.
Yes.
And so
yeah.
equity and inclusion requires that we kind of put everything on the table and redistribute.
That's what I was thinking, redistribution.
Yeah. Redistribution. We have to rethink our assumptions. We have to rethink how we think about both our past and our present and our future. As we are celebrating 150 years as an institution, when you think about 150 years, what will, need to change for us to keep up with the current day, right? Mm-hmm. So, we're very proud of our history, and I think that that history needs to always be lifted up. But at the same time, this place is very different than when it was founded, right? And yes. I don't think Inspector Krantz thought that there would ever be, 30% Hispanics, people, who speak a different language other than German here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, and we didn't build this place for the world we're living in right now. And so, and instead of always kind of doing these Band-Aid additions, on top of this, part of what I need from the organization to be successful is an understanding that some things will have to change.
Yes.
And that everyone who held on to things or power or position it will have to come into conversation with who we want to be in the future. So if we can imagine an Elmhurst University that one day will be minority-majority, right? Yes. That Spanish might be the first language of our institution, where our students are coming from. What does it mean that the alumni body is going to change? Yes. What does it mean to think about the presence of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people looking for positions on our board of trustees and in our alumni groups, and where will the donations come from? Mm-hmm. Then we've got to start reflecting that. We've got to start creating those things in which people will want to come back to and donate to and contribute to. So I think that first the organization has to have a willingness to not do this as a checkbox, mm-hmm. and really think about how we want to transform. And it's not always going to be comfortable for everyone, but the end result, it's a journey, and the end result is going to be a better Elmhurst University.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is, you mentioned that redistribution of mm-hmm. power.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we just want to add on. So we bring some other faces in of different colors or different languages, then we're diverse. And that's not really what that's all about, because we've seen numbers come through. People will come, but if they don't have that feeling that I'm a part of this, they leave. And we're continuing to do the same work. So in doing this, because you've given this a lot of thought. Mm-hmm. Evidently, you spent 30 years of your life doing it.
This is what I do, right?
This is what you do. So you've had an opportunity to think about what needs to take place to make that happen.
Right.
Because I really hadn't thought about shared power as a means to accomplishing diversity. Mm-hmm. Because I just think we just bring in more students and hire more faculty, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not it. So what do you believe, or have you encountered, are some of the challenges to creating this inclusive community that you envision, that you hope for Elmhurst and for campuses, I would think, across the country?
Well, we have to start with the fact that we need to create a presence of people who reflect, the populations in which we serve.
Yes.
So, people have been asking me, what is the low-hanging fruit? And I think some of that is, I don't know how low or high it hangs, but we've got to think about our workforce. We've got to think about the students that we're recruiting and how we are forming relationships with the communities in which they represent.
Yes.
It is not enough just to bring students here, but it is for them to know that you understand where they came from. And right now, one of the problems that plagues us in diversity, equity, and inclusion is always starting at a deficit mentality, right? Mm-hmm. So, we are giving, Black and brown and other students a wonderful, incredible opportunity to have this education that has served us so well. But what we don't take into consideration is how their presence here will change us. And so I often talk about this being like a house. You know, we've owned this house for 150 years, and we, every brick that's gone into it was given on the hands of people who, you know, had this deep connection. And all of a sudden, you know, we are looking up and we are inviting all these different people to join us. And is it enough that you're here? But what if I want to move the furniture? What if I want to paint the wall? Yes, yeah. What if I don't like this room and I want to knock down a wall and open it up? You know, oh no, you know, we like it the way it is. We don't want to change, right?
Yeah.
And so some of the challenges, it goes back to what I just talked about in changing, but it's also letting go of our thoughts about what it should look like. And who should be in control, and, you know, kind of who we serve, and really allow ourselves to open our own thinking around what the future looks like. And so, you know, when we think about hiring new faculty and getting them involved in shared governance, you know, should it take 10 or 15 years for a new faculty member to become chair of a major committee? You know, but that's, everyone has to earn it, right? I mean, you know, our tradition,
is
how it happens. You first have to, you know, get tenure. You then first have to chair a couple, department. You know, you need to be a department chair. You need to do this. And just the thought of that. So we're bringing people in with new ideas, but we're telling them to hold on and wait. And so part of the challenge is how do we reconfigure the way in which leadership happens? How do we reconfigure the way in which we respond to changing markets? You know, everyone's talking about the cliff in 2025. There's going to be this drastic, you know, reduction in birth rates, and especially in the upper Midwest. And so we are then forced to have to think about, what are we going to do? Are we going to go out of state? Do we have to spend more time in California? Mm. Well, we should have probably already been in California, right? We need to be thinking about places outside of Addison and Lombard. And, you know, one of the things that I look forward to working with the university on is creating a stronger tie to the city of Chicago. We sit outside the third largest city in the country. And, you know, in some of my very informal conversations with others, you would think that we only reach Oak Park, right? You know, after Oak Park, what's left, right? That's as far as we're going to go, right? And I think we have to be brave. And I know that the city, there's a lot of competition in the city. Mm-hmm. I also know that the city is wrought with a number of different kinds of issues. Yes. But we're supposed to be the solution. We're supposed to then bring them here, students here, so that they can get trained to go back into the city and help that city become better. And so, you know, just kind of getting out of our old ways and our old selves. And then you also need the resources.
Yes.
You know, you can't come in and say, you know, we want you to transform this place and it's just you. Or, you know, oh, you know, we can't, you know, that's too much budget. Or this, you know, we don't usually do, you know, we don't usually put two people in a single person's department, right? Or, and so we need to really prioritize resources so that our resources reflects the values of our principles around things like equity and inclusion, fairness, gender equality, those kinds of things. You know, it's so simple to say, but sometimes you got to follow the money. And where are the resources? Are we as serious? And I know that that's the case in the work that I do. You know, where your position, what your title is, you know, what kinds of resources do we perceive determines how serious people will take you. Because if you're just another position, you know, with no resources, and you can't help a department or you can't help a program think about significant changes, then what good are you to us? And so those are just a few of the things that I think are very important.
And I think those resources, the idea where we're willing to put our money and our resources, is a very good indicator of how of our commitment to this.
I
just thought about a thing that you mentioned when I first came here 15 years ago, 16, something mm-hmm. like the years ago, we had students from all over the country. We had students from Denver, Colorado, mm-hmm. some I'm in contact mm-hmm. with now, California, mm-hmm. Washington State, out mm-hmm. east, and from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how that changed. I think it had something to do with the economy. Mm-hmm. So then the recruitment was more localized, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. there was a time, because mm-hmm. I was surprised mm-hmm. at the we were attracting students from all over mm-hmm. the country mm-hmm. to this little place in right. Elmhurst. And I don't know if it is economics, mm-hmm. If economics are a problem.
Right.
And if it is, then yeah. again...
Well, you know, as big as the world has become for us, it's also become much smaller, right?
Yes,
and I think that the thing that we have to do is to act with intention. Mm-hmm. And if that is something that we want to see, if we want to be preparing our students to go out into this global society, that society has to be represented on our campus so that we don't, you shouldn't have to wait till you graduate
yes.
to figure out what's out there, right?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
it should be
yes.
something that you yeah. encounter from day one when you're on mm-hmm. campus. And I think we're doing a great job of that. I
yes.
want to add that. But I also think, you know, we can enhance some of that, you know, when we think about, when we look at, you know, the kind of demographics of our campus.
You know, it's interesting you say that. The podcast that we did before this was with the Study Away program
mm-hmm.
and the intersection between mm-hmm. bringing students onto campus mm-hmm. and bringing our students out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was came out of that that actually Melissa Newhouse said was mm-hmm. that the world deserves Elmhurst students.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
that we have a good cohort mm-hmm. of people here.
Mm-hmm.
And the world deserves...
The world needs
yes.
Elmhurst students,
world
right?
The world needs Elmhurst students.
And we have a responsibility to prepare those students to really be change makers in the way in which we... In our society.
Yeah.
So and it starts, like I said, it should start not, you know, in an internship, the second semester of their senior year, but it needs to really start, you know, at freshman orientation,
yes.
new student orientation. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your vision is just wonderful. And I really love hearing all about this. And so this leads very
yes.
nicely into the next question that we mm-hmm. had prepared. But we've got all sorts of different constituents here mm-hmm. at this university mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. all sorts of different concerns, mm-hmm. all sorts of different needs,
mm-hmm.
all sorts of different relationships to this power
right.
with the lower P that you're talking right. about, right?
right.
So how do you see yourself engaging with
mm-hmm.
faculty, administrators,
right.
students, alumni, mm-hmm. and the list goes on and
yeah.
on? Yeah.
You know, I always say a good chief diversity officer knows how to talk to everybody. And it's less talking and more listening.
Sure.
Because you learn a lot just by listening. And mm-hmm. then taking that and applying it in the different areas. So, you know, my work cuts across the institution. So, you know, we think about greater faculty diversity. We think about more staff diversity. We think about, you know, kind of equity amongst in our workforce. Like,
yeah.
you know, how do we equalize opportunities for promotions and raises, and how come they're making more? How come they got this? All those are equity questions. And then you also think about, you know, students, you know, they are, you know, looking at how people find these opportunities, you know, if you were at the student award ceremony the other night, you know, it was incredible to see all these students of color, you know, kind of winning awards for outstanding leadership. But on an everyday basis, you would might be thinking that, you know, where is everybody, right?
Yeah,
and so, you know, that whole question is making sure that we're in enough places, making sure that I'm listening to the concerns that people have and then helping create a pathway. You know, there's a reason why, this position is at the cabinet level, because,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, I need to be able to talk student life with the vice president for student life. I need to be able to talk advancement. You know, early on, I had a great conversation with Andrew Knapp, the vice president for advancement, and one of the award criteria was, you know, demonstrated love for Elmhurst, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I my question was, what does a demonstrated love look like?
Yeah,
right.
How
that's
do we create an equitable standard?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
is it the student who is in 16 organizations, lives on campus, mm-hmm. which I think is an important piece here, says yes to every opportunity to be in front? Or is it the, you know, the student who is maintaining, you know, dean's role, dean's list status while raising two kids and yes. working two jobs yes. and commuting every day and right. doesn't have time to hang out and frick, right? Mm-hmm. But they love this, and it's demonstrated in their commitment to us. The fact that they, you know, they keep coming back and they're academically achieving. How do you balance that? And so, you know, and you know, there are things that we never thought about. It was just assumed that, you know, a diehard Blue Jay would be this person who's, you know, kind of everyone knows them and they're just yes. always out there, right? But how do we see the unseen? And so, those kinds of questions. So in some ways, I get to stick my nose in a lot of different places. Sure. It's not sure. always welcome. It's not always acknowledged. And it doesn't always make change. But, you know that I'm, you know, that you got a piece of my nose, right? And so we're gonna keep talking about that. But that's an important piece. And it's not always fixing things. And it's not always saying yes. And it's not always, you know, kind of, you know, picking up every cause that comes across your doorstep, but it is hearing the concerns and relating those concerns to other concerns that you've heard, or thinking about how we, by solving one issue, we might be able to incorporate other parts of that issue. So if this is an issue with faculty, if this is an issue with staff, and we hear this from our alums, how do we create a collaborated approach? So at the table, I get to talk to the vice president for advancement. I get to pull them together to talk about mm-hmm. how we might join in addressing these concerns. So yeah. it's important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You do need all of those
yep.
positions. It's not That's just right. you and right. the students, but they're the forces that be,
right.
power, big P's. That
right.
can help make some of those things
exactly.
happen.
Access to the board of trustees, yes. access to the alumni board, yeah. access to donors and those kinds of things.
That's a big word, yeah. having access.
Mm-hmm.
So you can open doors, gain,
That's right.
give others access.
That's right.
You keep mentioning this idea of being heard. And mm-hmm. I think it's important because mm-hmm. sometimes I think students may feel they're not mm-hmm. heard. And I'm even thinking there may be others on campus mm-hmm. involved in just keeping things going
mm-hmm.
that may feel unheard.
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe are some of the, because I was thinking about one question, but I think I want mm-hmm. to alter this. What do you believe are some of the things that keep, that or may make minoritized voices feel that they are mm-hmm. not being heard?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things in place that
right.
that makes them feel that they don't hear us, so why say
right.
anything? Yeah.
You know, I think that there are a few things. I think, you know, when you're welcomed into a community like Elmhurst University, but you don't see yourself reflected in the faculty and staff. Mm-hmm. So it was important that I'm here, but it's not important that the people in front of the classroom look like me and can speak my language or know of my experience. Doesn't mean that everybody has to be the same. But, you know, we want to see ourselves, any, you know, babies want to see themselves reflected in their right. parents' eyes,
yes.
right? They
yes.
want to see, you know, who do I look like? I think, you know, I think the other part is that we sometimes, you know, there's so much that gets in the way of us hearing their voices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Black student comes in to talk to you and the first thing you think, oh, my God, you know, I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I say nothing.
Yes.
Or I just say yes, 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 you know, when I really don't mean yes, 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 yes. Or I make promises that I can't keep.
Yes.
And then when those promises are not kept, you know, this is another example mm-hmm. of, you know. And so I think we've got to train and help people understand how to listen to diverse voices.
Yes.
Not every request for equality is a demand. Not every, you know, issue, you know, becomes a binary between us and them.
Right.
And sometimes we get in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us tone deaf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our fear makes us tone deaf. Our belief that while you're here, you're not really a part of this community. You know, you are, you know, we're doing you a favor. And when you don't see people, the full humanity of others, it's easy to not hear what they're really saying, yeah. right? Yeah. So, you know, we want, you know, non-gender bathrooms, right? You know, and so, you know, what do? You know, we just create walls, you know, everybody gets an individual stall. And this is not a criticism in as much as it is, but what else are we hearing you saying? I want to be seen and I want to be recognized. Yes. And I, you know, and can we talk about bathrooms being one aspect mm-hmm. of how we accommodate people, you know, whose identity is either in transition or changing or have changed. And it's so much more than a bathroom stall, but it is about, you know, what happens when I walk into the bathroom
yes.
and how do people see me as I approach and, you know, how do we value my desire for that kind of privacy, but also that need to be very public in seeing a sign that acknowledges that I am here. So it's, you know, I think there's a lot of ways in which we don't see faces and we don't hear voices. And until we get out of our own way, we all have work to do mm-hmm. to kind of deal with our own demons mm-hmm. around, you know, when I was growing up, you know, there were no Black people in my community. So I don't really know. So don't hold me accountable for, or, you know, I just don't know. Right. But, you know, when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of white people in my community.
Exactly. Yes.
But you would never take that as an excuse for me when I walk into a space and have to ask you, you know, what would you like to eat, you know, or, you know, how do you, you know, how, you know, do you want to do well in classes, right? Mm-hmm. And so we walk in with our all of these assumptions about who we're talking to and who we're seeing.
Yes.
And until we get to know people as people and understand that everybody wants the same things. And my job here is to just make sure everyone has access to equitable programs and outcomes. You know, yes. you know, we could talk about trying to make study away more equitable or accessible. But for the student that doesn't want to study away, you don't have to study away, right? You don't have to go abroad. You don't have to do that. But if you ever wanted to, I would never want you to feel like you couldn't.
Yes.
Right.
That was one of the things we were talking about, that it is accessible.
Exactly.
Yes.
It
yes.
is, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, I don't like sushi, but I certainly wouldn't want to walk into a sushi restaurant. I certainly wouldn't want to walk into a sushi restaurant and people say, well, what are you doing here, right?
Yeah.
You know, why, you know, Black people don't swim, right?
Yeah.
So
so
we can't have a pool, right?
That's
we can't go into pools, right? And so that's the kind of way in which, you know, our prior assumptions can create this invisibility that you're talking about.
I think we need to learn to pay attention to mm-hmm. the silences. Sometimes silence screams louder than mm-hmm. anything else.
Exactly.
I remember once talking to an individual, and there was a statement about how the Black students, mm-hmm. African American students, were not going to homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And this was brought out. We were talking mm-hmm. about attrition and mm-hmm. what we could do. And so the colleague said to me, well, they just need to come to the homecoming. If they get involved in homecoming and homecoming activities, they'll feel a part of the campus. And I just smile because I give leeway to people mm-hmm. in certain generations.
Grace.
Like I know
mm-hmm.
the younger ones and my students, mm-hmm. I have no patience. I tell mm-hmm. them, you know better.
Mm-hmm.
You've been taught better, had the examples.
Mm-hmm.
But at that moment, I realized that she was looking at this from another position. So just like many young white students that came mm-hmm. here already, like, this is my place. I just have to find it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another layer added mm-hmm. to this. So just
mm-hmm.
coming to the homecoming
mm-hmm.
activities and homecoming mm-hmm. dance and game, it's going to be a little bit
mm-hmm.
more than that.
Right.
So you find that time, this was about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
people not coming.
Mm-hmm.
The voices are silent. Then we
mm-hmm.
need to pay attention
mm-hmm.
because there's something they're saying to us
right.
in this.
Maybe they don't feel welcome. Maybe they don't feel welcome. They don't feel like the music reflects their experiences. Yeah. They feel like this event was designed for a certain segment of the population, and that's why it's important that in planning, we remember that we are, you know, we're not the Elmhurst of 1950. We're not the Elmhurst of 1960, 70, 80, 90, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And we have a responsibility. And what I want to do is create accountability for people remembering that, you know, this place is so much more than what you think it is.
Yeah. This is a good work. And it's given, I'm sitting here just thinking my brain's going a million miles a minute. We are at our 150th.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll hit our 300th, right? 150 years, right? We won't be here.
I know.
Right.
They might have remote classes from other planets.
Right.
This work, I mean, there's a whole history of this work, mm-hmm. and this work goes back
mm-hmm.
a very, very long way. As we move into the next 150th years, mm-hmm. how do you see equity and inclusion mm-hmm. work evolving?
Yes,
you know, I think we're all old enough to recognize that when we look at today, you know, marriage equality, when we look at the ways in which we are using pronouns, when we think about the ways in which women have broken so many different ceilings, Kamala Harris in the White House, we are living in an unimaginable time,
we
right?
We certainly are, yes.
And so if we can forecast 150 years from now, I would hope that we're 150 times farther than we are today, mm-hmm. where a person's race and a person's gender and the way in which you identify will not be a religious issue, but it will just be a issue of personal preference or personal choice, or the ways in which people identify won't be used to pit us against each other, but that it will just be the way it is. And I think that, this place will have to look very different because, everyone is going to be mixed. You know, everyone is going to be one, two, or three different things.
Yes.
And so even when we talk about what Black people do, we're going to see a change in that definition, you know, besides what we see in TV commercials, because there's no longer a Black family. There's no longer a white family. Every family in a TV, in a commercial today.
On the commercials, it's like, oh my.
Right. You know, it's like we conquered, you know, the portrayal of Black and Hispanic families. And now we're able just to kind of substitute all over the place. But I think that it will be unrecognizable to us.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do hope we will see at 150 years is more, I hope that we have gotten over the fact that who you are somehow can offend who I am, or it threatens who I am.
Right.
And that we are just kind of all in this thing together. And that the world is wide enough, and that the pie is big enough. And so we are not at each other's throats over every right or perceived right or perceived loss of a right.
Mm-hmm.
I think about our kids today. You just had a grandbaby.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, Erica, I don't know enough about you, but I would imagine that there are people in your life who, you know, are have an incredibly different reality. And it's not based in a fear, and it's not based in shame, and it's not based in oppression. And I just see a lot of that removing, and people are just going to be people. Because in order to have the careers and the technology and the ways in which we will need to be thinking 150 years from now, race is going to become less important. Yeah. Gender is going to become less important. It's what you're bringing to the table. And, you know, people are talking about a sustainable world, and, you know, and you know, it's going to be much more about the environment and the ways in which health and the way we live.
So when you're basically saying is in 150 years, your position will have evolved back into what it was once was, and just doing the fun stuff.
Exactly.
Because we won't have to worry about all the issues.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It reminds me, there's a Haudenosaunee prayer, Thanksgiving mm-hmm. prayer, that after they thank each of the, like, we thank the rain, mm-hmm. we thank mm-hmm. that, and after each thing they say, our minds are one.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that universal gratitude of mm-hmm. being alive and being together,
mm-hmm.
the other stuff doesn't matter.
Right.
Our minds are one.
Right.
And that just reminds me of that mm-hmm. a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a wonderful motto
mm-hmm.
for Elmhurst
right.
as well
right.
as we move forward,
right.
that our minds are one.
Our minds are one.
Mm-hmm. Bruce King, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, this has been so much fun on a wonderful, beautiful afternoon. Thank you for this time.
School, we love Elmhurst, live for a God shed his grace on thee.